foot two and he's 6 feet four. He fights with missiles and with spears. He's all of 31 and he's only 17. He's been a soldier for 1,000 years. He's a Catholic, a Hindu, an atheist, a Jain, a Buddhist and a Baptist and a Jew. And he knows he shouldn't kill, and he knows he always will kill you for me, my friend, and me for you. And he's fighting for Canada, he's fighting for France, he's fighting for the USA. And he's fighting for the Russians, and he's fighting for Japan, and he thinks we'll put an end to war this way. And he's fighting for democracy, he's fighting for the Reds, he says it's for the peace of all. He's the one who must decide who's to live and who's to die, and he never sees the writing on the wall. But without him, how would Hitler have condemned him at Dachau? Without him, Caesar would have stood alone. He's the one who gives his body as a weapon of the war, and without him, all this killing can't go on. He's the universal soldier, and he really is to blame. His orders come from far away no more. They come from him and you and me. And brothers, can't you see? This is not the way we put an end to war.
This is KXLU 88.9 FM in LA, KXLU.com all around the world, broadcasting from the Loyola Marymount University campus. Sun is just, well, kind of setting. Thank you, Annabelle, for another great show. We love it every Sunday night. 6 to 7, Serenata de Trios, and then comes Mystic Pete Chronicles. I am your host, Mystic Pete, and we have a really good show tonight. Very special guest producing a show called Parallel Process of the Odyssey. We have David Koner Zuckerman. Hi, David.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me and us.
Yeah, and I'm going to be working with Christine Ann, my co-host tonight. Say hi, Christine.
Hello, everybody.
A nice radio voice, okay. Can you introduce your guests, and then we'll tell everybody what's going on tonight?
Yeah, I have two of the actors here with me tonight. The star of the show, his name is Alan McRae. He plays one of the two brothers that the story is about, Dennis. And we have Annabella Ray, who is Dennis's patient and is in the very first part of the play.
By the way, the tune I just played was by Buffy St. Marie, a very important singer from kind of the era we're talking about, and that was called Universal Soldier. If you haven't heard her music, I would encourage you to go out right now. No, wait till the end of the show, and then go find it.
So go find Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
Well, her sister.
Oh, okay.
Her not evil twin. So, Alan and Annabelle, you want to say a word? Introduce yourselves, please.
Yeah. Hello. It's a pleasure to be here. I haven't heard the show before, so I'm excited to see what goes on.
This show? Oh, it's one of the best shows in the United States.
That's what I hear now. Yeah, researching, I found that it's right at the top.
That's what I've heard.
Uh-huh.
And Annabelle Ray?
Hi. Yes, happy to be here. Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here and discuss this incredible project.
So we'll talk about your acting experience and career, and later on we're going to have a scene, live theater at KXLU. You're going to read it. So everybody stay tuned for that. But David, let's first talk about this play. And you wrote it, you're producing it, and you're the director. Yes. At the Odyssey. By the way, it's premiering September 26th at the Odyssey Theater.
It's the last time I do all three, let me tell you.
Okay. Like juggling and eating fire and cooking dinner at the same time.
It's been a bear, but hopefully it'll be worth it. I'm very passionate about the subject matter, which is, in a sense, violence, and whether or not violence is ever justified, and it centers on two brothers who served in the same platoon in the Vietnam War, which was a very rare occurrence, and you had to have connections to do so. But their father was very high up in the Army and was able to put them in the same platoon. You would think that parents wouldn't want their brothers in the same platoon for obvious reasons. However, this guy, Alan McRae, or Dennis, was very sensitive, and the parents were worried about him, and so they wanted to put his older brother in the same platoon, so they took him out of cadet school, officer school, and they forced him together in Vietnam.
First question, what is the Vietnam War? What is that?
I know, right? Well, you'll learn about it, and it's 50 years later, and it is the 50th anniversary of America's involvement in that war. And the play does take place in the present. And it starts off with a session between Dennis and his patient Annabella, but then quickly gets into a visit from Bobby, Dennis's older brother. They've been estranged for a long time, and Bobby carries a secret that he wants to reveal. And revealing it would destroy Dennis's life, and that's how the play takes off.
Well, from what I understand, this is a play about betrayal and trauma and morality. And you explore those themes through this dynamic personal relationship.
Yes, it's about that, and also whether or not violence can ever be justified, especially preemptive violence.
Now, that's a very current issue.
Yes.
But let's give a little more background, because some of us know full well what the Vietnam War is. Other people have no idea what just took place in very recent history. I would just say that a lot of the older men you see on the street who are homeless probably were veterans of that war, and now they're living on the street. I mean, not a whole lot of them left, but for a long time, that was one of the major components of homelessness, the guys who fought in this war in the 60s and early 70s. So let's talk about what is this? What Vietnam, it's a country.
Yes, and those veterans who are on the streets are fighting another war, right? And that's part of the running commentary in the play, that war doesn't always just take place on the battlefield, but it is probably harder than anything that any guy or girl can take part in. But so we go back to Vietnam, which the West, meaning France and her allies, including the United States, were trying to keep the country of Vietnam out of the hands of the Soviet Union and the Chinese. So it was
from turning communist, the domino theory.
Yes, that's right. And so we put a lot of money and eventually put our own troops into Vietnam, and came out of that war in about 1972 for the most part, but we really got everybody out by 75. There were only about a few thousand by 1975. So traditionally, people might think that we lost the Vietnam War. However, there's a perspective that counters that in the play.
All right, and just to fill in some of the details. So yeah, the French were in Vietnam. As they were pulling out, the leader, Ho Chi Minh, actually was courting the United States and wanted to be our allies, but we decided we're just going to send advisors, and advisors were the military, and that turned into a full-blown war where tens of thousands of Americans were killed and hundreds of thousands of Vietnamese were killed and injured. Just a massive devastation. And then that spread to Laos and Cambodia. So it turned into this regional war, we created that. And then that led to this massive genocide called the Killing Fields in Cambodia. It was just an utter catastrophe, a massive event in human history. Is it even taught anymore? If you didn't live through it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a version. Before World War II, the French were in Vietnam. They were also in those other two countries you mentioned. They were colonies. And after the Second World War, there was hope that those countries would become independent. However, France wanted back in, and they needed American support to do so. Without the American support, they would have had to go to the Russians. So because we were afraid that the French would go to the Russians, we went in there full bore, and we actually funded 90% of the French war in Vietnam, and they finally left about 1957. So we just went in there when it was clear that the country was not going to unify.
You know more of the backstory than I do, but I grew up in a like radical left family, and I remember as a kid going to anti-war demonstrations and carrying picket signs. So I was like a big part of this as a child, picked up what I could. But just a couple of highlights or lowlights that happened that everybody knew about at the time. There was something called the My Lai Massacre. There was something where we just wiped out a whole town, but apparently that wasn't uncommon. There was something called the Pentagon Papers, with which
Ellsberg.
Thank you. I was close. Daniel Ellsberg worked for the Rand Corporation, and he exposed these hidden papers that said, like, we knew all along. I don't know. Maybe you probably.
Well, that was after he actually worked for the CIA and took part in killing.
Okay.
But.
Yeah, I know the outlines, but you fill it in.
Well, this. I think an 11-year-old kid, a 10-year-old kid, can understand that war is wrong. So I am not pro-war. However, this play doesn't take a position on it. It opens up more questions about why we go to war. And what the reason we do go to war is for land and resources. And however, the government hates to push war that way. They like to use moral reasons for it. So I'm looking at all the reasons why people do go to war, and again, whether or not preemptive violence is something that is right. And that is a part of how governments are looking at things these days, whether or not they should strike first.
Well, so this, your play, it's really the backdrop of the play. I guess you could use any war, but just to finish the history lesson, just because we're talking about it anyway, and I'm the guy working the controls here, and it was an extremely important cultural moment in the United States, because it was one of the few times in history where the public, the citizenry, kind of rose up and said, what are we doing? Yeah, because these young men would get sent off to war and come back in body bags, and you had all kinds of demonstrations all over the United States, all over the world, going like, why are we in Vietnam? Why are you dying? Why these poor, you know, peasants, rice farmers were blowing them up. So it was an important shift of consciousness to question governments, along with the Pentagon Papers, which indicated governments, well, imagine that, lie to us. So it was the beginning, along with a lot of other things in the 60s, a lot of other cultural shifts, even to diet and spirituality. But, you know, what is government and the purpose of democracy? Like, it questioned everything, and we're still wrestling with those questions, perhaps more so today.
Well, the reason that there was an anti-war movement was because the war was televised. So 10 years before, we were in the Korean War and lost about 50,000 servicemen, and many others were injured. But since there was no television there, people didn't rise up against it, because the basic premise of each of those wars was the same. But by the 1960s, you had cameramen going into battle with the soldiers, and people had to watch that on television every night. So that was the reason for the anti-war movement. And then the anti-war movement ended after Nixon stopped the mandatory draft.
Oh, interesting. So we don't have a draft, but at that point, you would get dragged off to war. Either you had to flee the country, you went to jail, or you went and fought. You didn't have a choice. Now we have a volunteer army.
Correct.
Gotcha. So that's when it's good. Okay.
Yeah. Well, he was smart about that, because he was trying to stop the protests, and he knew the way to stop that would be to stop the draft.
And then, of course, there's a whole epic saga about Richard Nixon. I mean, there's a lot that happened culturally in this period. in there some places. We landed on the moon. Did you know that?
We were just talking about that.
That might have been faked, though.
Well, most people think that the space exploration is all about exploration, when really it's about dominance, technology, and who's going to dominate space.
Oh,
so it's a war.
Okay, we're going deep now, David.
Well, we are. We used to have three fronts, land, sea, and air, but now we have five fronts. Cyber and space are added to that.
And now I hear that AI is becoming sentient and like lying to us and trying to propagate itself and keep itself from getting turned off. Another program, another conversation.
If they lie about me being as handsome as Alan, I'm all for it.
You are a very handsome man, David.
Thank you. But Annabella has a face made for radio. No, I'm just kidding. You got to come to the play. I mean, she's
we're starting
dynamite.
With the humor. I thought that was banned. This is serious stuff. We're talking about Vietnam. What was I going to say? Oh, one other serious comment, then we'll get to the play at hand. I remember you said, because of media, media made this war. It brought it into people's living rooms. I remember I was about 7 or 8, and I was looking at a picture in some magazine, and it was a picture of a young girl and a couple of people, and she was naked, a Vietnamese girl, about my age, and she was being burnt by napalm. It's a very famous picture. And I remember, like, crying. Like, I just started to cry over this profoundly moving photograph. I'd heard about Vietnam. Now I understood, oh, this is what it is. So media is, a very vital force of consciousness. And, of course, we're back to what we were just saying. We're wrestling with the consequences of media and technology. We're in the middle of like a soup of chaos.
Absolutely.
Soup of chaos.
Yeah, it's a good one. Well, you talk about
my punk band.
You have definitely tragedies in Vietnam, but what most people don't realize is that 90% of casualties in war are civilian. So that is nothing new what happened in Vietnam, but it was televised. So, for example, we dropped bombs on Japan and wiped out hundreds of thousands of folks, but there were no cameramen there while it happened. So when we compare tragedies, I think it's helpful to keep the big picture in mind, so that as we don't demonize the Vietnam veterans.
Fair enough. These people laid down their lives and were courageous and did what they thought was the right thing to do.
Absolutely.
Their country told them, pick up a gun and go fight.
And a lot of them didn't have any choice.
Yeah. Let's involve the other people here. What do you say, Alan, Annabella, or Alan? Any comments about the? Because you're involved in this play now that is dealing with these issues. Any comments personally, or you know, philosophically about what we've just been talking about?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the play is so wonderful in that it calls attention to this war and how it still affects people to this day. I mean, it talks a lot about PTSD and people, you know, reliving their experiences in the war. And I think it's really important that people can see an example of that and feel the reality of it as an audience member.
Yeah. I think it would be very educational for parents to bring young ones to the show. And involve them and let them see a part of history and how it worked out or how it didn't work out, you know, depending on your point of view.
I just want to know how you prepare yourself for this kind of show, like, you know, character. How do you, like, do you prepare yourself before going into...
Yeah, how do you, yeah. These are intense things.
Do you get ready to face,
yeah,
you know, for the character, to give it alive?
Yeah, my character, Amanda, is not directly involved in the war at all, but she's a patient of Dennis's, and she's grappling with a violent dream that she had, in which actually she was a victim of intended violence, and she fights back, and she's extremely uncomfortable with the power that she felt after fighting back, and really a lot of the time that I'm in the play is recounting this story. And in terms of preparation, I feel like it's, you know, there's so many images in the story that Amanda tells, and a lot of it is just really sitting there and visualizing and like experiencing what she's describing. And I think a lot of it is just bringing my attention to the present moment and bringing my attention to Alan, who's my scene partner, and really listening to one another. And then I think the life kind of just flows through.
In my case, there's a tremendous amount of information on Vietnam and what happened over there. A lot of documentaries. Ken Burns has a wonderful documentary. You know, I forget how many episodes that is, David.
A lot.
It's a lot of episodes. I did watch just recently, it played the My Lai Massacre that you'd spoken about, Peter. And it was just brutal. It's just brutal. The other thing, too, is just reading about, there are books out there, too, and of individual stories, and trying to identify with some of these people, Christine, I think helps a lot to get you into character. Just to see...
I think it's a strength.
Yes.
And power.
Yes.
To be able to, you know...
Definitely.
Yes.
And the thing is, it's it becomes very aware that what you're talking about is... really life and death. So it's very powerful.
Yes.
It's worth fighting for, you know.
Tell you what, let's take a little musical break and so we can all catch our breath. We're talking about a play called Parallel Process. ParallelProcessThePlay.com for more information. It opens Friday, September 26th at the Odyssey Theater in West LA. Here's some music that was very popular at the time.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand in the street, singing songs and a carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Paranoia strikes into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
We better stop now.
What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
KXLU 88.9 FM in LA, KXLU.com around the world. Mystic Pete here with a show called The Mystic Pete Chronicles. And tonight we're featuring a group from the play called Parallel Process. We have David Koner Zuckerman, who's the writer, director, and producer. And we have Alan McRae and Annabella Ray. Oh, by the way, we're going to do a scene in a minute, but this is also produced by Reed Altman, who is Robert Altman's son.
Robert Reed Altman.
Why don't you explain that connection with the movie, MASH?
Yeah, so I'm buddies with Bobby Altman, whose professional name is Robert Reed Altman, and we're doing a movie together next year. But he found out about the play, read it, and he thought the themes covered were very similar to those that his father dramatized in the original movie MASH, and wanted to produce it with me. So I'm very grateful for Bobby.
Do people know what the movie... Explain about MASH.
MASH was a black comedy, so to speak, and it was about a medical unit, and it was really written about the Vietnam War, but Fox Studios told Bobby's father, Robert Altman, who's the famous director, actually UCLA is doing a whole series right now about his films. They told him this movie cannot be about Vietnam because it's too controversial, so it has to be about the Korea War in quotes. So Bobby talks about that on the website, and it's all good.
It's all good.
It's all good.
It was a movie, and then there was a TV show, rather bloodless. I'm a critic.
I'm just
criticizing.
That was, I think, still probably the most watched television show of all time.
And then there was another big movie around, a book, Catch 22, which is a phrase that people even speak these days, that was by Joseph Heller. Really, like a couple of really important movies that described war and the futility and ridiculousness and absurdity of it all and brutality. But anyway, we're going to do a scene now?
Yeah, so this opens the play. It's a one-act play. And like I said, it does take place in the present, though it covers topics including the Vietnam War. And this scene is between Amanda and Dennis. Amanda is being played by Annabella Ray, and Dennis is being played by Alan McRae.
So, how much time do we have left?
About 10 minutes.
Okay. Well, I've been having another recurring dream, but it's not the one I told you about last time, because we probably can't talk about that.
Well, it's not that we can't talk about it, Amanda. I mean, it was very flattering to hear at my age.
I feel guilty for even having the thoughts.
Well, thankfully, thoughts aren't a crime.
You're obviously not Catholic.
Used to be.
Oh.
So, tell me about the new dream.
Well, it starts off with me giving a talk on personal empowerment. You know, the book I'm working on. And I'm in a bookstore reading from the chapter on taking back control, and the crowd is totally locked in. I mean, I'm killing it. And as I'm nearing the end, I notice this guy. But he's not there for me.
For the reading?
Right. He's dressed in this lumberjack shirt, and he's just walking back and forth, browsing through books. And when he finally notices me, he stops and he stares. He sneers, actually. It's uncomfortable. It feels like he's challenging me.
In what way?
The material, what I'm saying.
About taking back control.
Yes. And the more he sneers, the more defiant I feel and the more passionate I get. And I mean, I'm almost tripping over my words to finish my final thoughts. And when I do, the crowd just erupts into this torrid applause, and it feels amazing. So much so that I completely lose myself in the moment. But then I see Lumberjack Man still sneering, and I don't know how to respond, so I sort of just acknowledge him. And then he disappears. And for some reason, I'm completely heartbroken.
Dennis' phone rings.
Sorry about that, Amanda.
No problem. So then I'm in this hotel room, just relaxing, and there's a loud knock at the door, and when I open it, it's
Lumberjack Man.
Mm-hmm. Right. And he struts in, he pushes me back, and slams the door. He rips off my sweater, and I mean like rips, like tears the sleeves, and pushes me onto the bed. It's all very startling, but I'm not scared. I'm excited. So I start to take more control sexually, but it's just as I'm about to, you know, he starts screaming at me. I mean, he's going off, calling me all kinds of horrific things, and this is when I get scared. But before I can run out of the room, he grabs my wrist really hard, and he throws me to the floor, and he says, "I'm in charge now." Now I'm terrified. But then I'm pissed. So I reach inside my purse for this pistol, and I point it at him. And he shrinks into the corner like a little kid pleading for his life. And I'm feeling more powerful than I've ever felt in my life.
It felt good.
Yes. But when I wake up, I feel unclean.
How so?
My whole purpose in life is to help people, women, feel powerful. And in my dream, I'm feeling uber powerful, but it's because I'm holding a defenseless man's life in my hands and loving it. In fact, I'm excited at the prospect of murdering him. That's kind of off, isn't it?
I don't think so, Amanda.
No?
No. I think it's quite natural to feel all sorts of things, including excitement and a potent desire for revenge after winning a power struggle like that.
Okay, good. I'm not a psychopath.
No, but you are very conflicted about feeling pleasure in the aggression you displayed in the dream.
That's right.
Why do you think that is?
I guess there's a little voice in my head. I think it's my hippie mom's voice that says violence can't ever be justified, Amanda.
Well, mom's voice or not, well, let's think about that. What would you do in real life if a situation like in your dream actually occurred?
Call for help.
And if that didn't work?
Try to run.
But if you couldn't get away?
I guess I'd attack him.
So violence can be justified?
Yes, because he's trying to hurt me.
And in the dream, a part of you wanted to hurt him back.
Which disgusts me.
What's wrong with taking satisfaction in something that's violent?
So, violence is an appropriate solution to life's problems?
No. I'm just suggesting that it's not wrong to feel good about fantasizing about doing something violent. I mean, otherwise, who would go see action movies?
But what do you think of all of this?
Which part?
Violence.
Well, what do you imagine, I think?
I mean as a person, not as my therapist.
You think there's a difference?
Is there?
Let's just say I was exposed to violence at a very young age.
Oh.
You see, my dad was a member of the John Birch Society. Every night at dinner, we heard how the commies were going to take the steak off our table, and how the Jews and the blacks and the Mexicans were going to be our downfall. Although he used different descriptors. You understand? Well, that's how I was raised. And at 12, I took all of it with me to summer camp, began spouting it out to my fellow campers, till the counselor overheard me, took me behind the cabin and told me how the world really worked, after he beat the shit out of me.
Your camp counselor?
Yeah. If I ever see that guy again, I'll probably thank him for saving my life.
Yeah. Wow. Beautiful cadence, beautiful rhythm. Powerful. Well, how would you describe Annabella and Ellen, the moral quandaries? How do you see the moral questions in this piece?
I was pointing at Alan so he could go first. Well, I think, you know, Amanda's character is very interesting because she's describing a dream in which, you know, from my perspective, it feels so almost clear cut that she should fight back in an instance where someone has gone into a room and attacked her, but she is so uncomfortable with the fact that she did fight back and the fact that she enjoyed the power that she felt when she essentially defeated him. But yeah, so I think it highlights a very interesting, like, moral dilemma of, you know, when it's easy, I guess, from like an outside reader's perspective to say, oh, well, it's clear that she should fight back if someone is actively trying to harm her. But when you are experiencing that, and even in Amanda's case, that it's a dream, but when you are experiencing it, it might not feel so clear cut. And there's that voice in your head that's like, but I don't want to harm another person, you know, because she isn't a violent person. And it's interesting to me to like, that she's voicing this experience of questioning herself in a moment that where she was really just defending herself.
I think it's very interesting in this scene that Amanda mentions her mom, her hippie mom, and the hippie mom says violence can never be justified. And I think what Dennis is trying to help Amanda with is put it into some kind of perspective, that it's all right to fantasize about that. The other thing that I think is interesting as well is when Dennis talks about going to camp, a 12-year-old, and spouting all of this rhetoric that his father, you know, filled him with, and gets beaten up by his counselor. I mean, that just wouldn't happen today, you know. But back then, I'm saying, if I see that guy again, I think I'll thank him for saving my life. So it was a very different time periods combined, and I think it's just pretty interesting. You know?
Please tell us about your other projects.
Other projects. I've been at this a long time. I started in Canada, actually. I'm Canadian. And moved down here and did a lot of television, a lot of sitcoms, a lot of soap operas as well, and movies. I had a run as the father of, there's a movie, Three Ninjas. It's three boys, and their grandfather teaches them how to karate, how to, you know, do karate. Yeah, exactly. And we did three of those pictures, and so I was the dad in those three and watched the kids grow up. So. And then I kind of got into advertising for a while, you know, and then just couldn't give this up. And when this play came along, I was just thrilled to be able to get behind it and get into something as worthwhile and as well written as this.
Oh yeah, so I grew up doing theater, which was always a big passion of mine. And then after school, I really primarily focused on film and TV. I mostly did television projects. I was in Long Slow Exhale, which was on Spectrum and BET. Did a few other things. And was in this show, Second Chances, which actually recently came out. But, you know, Parallel Process is kind of getting back in touch with my roots of doing theater again, which I haven't done in a long time. So that's been really wonderful.
Well, we're talking about a play called Parallel Process, which is going to debut at the Odyssey Theater on Sepulveda Boulevard, September 26th. You can find out more information at parallelprocesstheplay.com. There was going to be another actor here tonight, Tom Jenkins, but I guess he had other plans, huh?
Tom Jenkins is at the Emmys. Can you believe that?
You know?
KXLU,
come on, man. Priorities.
He said, if I could get rid of my ticket, I would, but I already paid for it. So I'm like, all right.
We love you, Tom.
Tom is an amazing actor. He was most recently in the movie Oppenheimer, which I think was nominated and won all sorts of Academy Awards. He played Oppenheimer's best friend, whose wife Oppenheimer might have had an affair with. Tom has got an incredible amount of both film and television experience, and he's coming in to play Bobby, the second lead in this play, who's Dennis's older brother.
That was the voice of David Koner Zuckerman, who wrote, directed, and produced Parallel Process. Let's hear a little more music from the era. This is called Ohio. So that was by a little band called Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, about an incident. This is another important cultural moment where students from Ohio State University, David's That's shaking right. his head, students were killed by the National Guard for protesting against the Vietnam War. Also a very famous picture of a woman kneeling, crying over these dead bodies. Apparently there get a little more political. There were black people killed, but when white people finally got killed, suddenly it was a turning point for the nation, and the nation went like, wait, what? White people, white students are getting killed. So, okay. What are we talking about? Oh, we're talking about Parallel Process, the play that's debuting September 26th at the Odyssey Theater 2025. Why don't we talk a little about theater in general? We just come out of there was a plague. I don't know if you were aware of it, but, COVID, did you hear about it? Oh, anyway, so what's happening with theater? I mean, I know it just was like a gut punch to the whole community, but things seem to be kind of crawling back, yes?
Well, I come from the movie world, so I've produced a bunch of movies and had a hit movie, and there was a TV series based on the movie for a season. And I know it's hard to produce a movie, but I had no idea it was also very, very difficult to produce a play in LA. It's very hard to find a theater. It's very difficult to even break even on a play. It's a closed world, so to speak. Everybody kind of knows each other. But I wanted to do this for many reasons, one of which is I think there is going to be a resurgence of the theater and live performances in general as things in the other media get more predictable and more formulaic with the advent of AI, etc. I think a shadow industry will form, and I want to be riding that wave.
One of the issues in Los Angeles is there's 1,000 things to do every night and then 10,000 things online, and I mean, just an enormous amount of opportunities. So it's hard to get people to show up and pay for something live. But as we know, it's a compelling experience. It's important. It's important to sit with an audience. It's an important thing to fund these productions so live theater can happen. But then how do we engage the next generation? You young folk, Annabella. How do we get, you know, people coming up to focus on this, you know, ancient but very vital art form?
I mean, I really think a lot of it is word of mouth and social media. I think social media is big, obviously, in reaching young audiences. But I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's tough for me to answer this because I'm in a theater community of like young people. So in my mind, so many of the people I know are interested in theater. But I really think like a lot of it is like just telling people about projects that you're passionate about and exposing people to theater as much as possible, and then they can feel the magic in the room when it happens, and that's something that you can't replicate in any other medium.
I remember when I was young, I was just terrified of speaking in front of people. I guess I've gotten over that, I hope. But there was one moment, I guess I was playing music in front of people, and I kind of got high. I was like, oh, this is cool. Like, everybody's paying attention to me. Do you remember when that first happened to you?
Ooh, I mean, growing up, I did so much theater. I did, like, a lot of musical theater as a kid. And I remember it was such a high performing always. I can't pick one exact moment, but I know that I really loved that magic of putting on a play. Sorry, say that again?
The connection that you get.
Yes, the connection to the material and also the people like in the cast with you. Like that is so special to me.
It's like you're sharing one giant brain.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's so much energy and effort to work together to create this thing that's ephemeral and it's so fun.
But I think the younger community sees it as some old thing for parents, or I don't know. I mean, I just don't understand. I don't understand how we bridge the virtual world with the real world and inform people about how compelling it is.
I think there has to be a shift in values that takes place. And I think it has to be taught at the ground level from the family on through the schools. So people understand that it's very captivating and essential to be part of. That's how I see it. I think we have to start talking about it more, like Annabella said. Easy for me to say. And maybe making it a little bit easier on folks to stage productions.
You mean like public support of the arts?
Public support of the arts, exactly.
That's a radical idea. I've never heard of that.
Can you believe it?
Any comment, Alan?
It's just such a special place to be in the theater and to be on stage and to be expressing someone else's words. You know, there's a lot of actors are doing their own plays. You know, they write them and one man shows or one woman shows, and I just think it's it's how do you get more people to come and see it.
I guess they've been asking that in Shakespeare's time, right?
Yeah. To be or not to be. You know, it's
literally. Well, I mean, when I was coming up, there was the Ren Fair, and like the cool theater kids had this, it was a lifestyle and a language, and it just drew a lot of people, and like the freaks, like the weirdos. But I don't know. Is there a Ren? Is there anything like that now? K-pop demon hunters or something? Or anime. Yeah. Anime.
I think the Ren Fair is also still a thing. I've never been, but I see it on social media a lot. It's still very much a thing.
But apparently anime is the thing that's bringing people in. Anime.
Yeah. The cosplay. Like
cosplay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, the masks that we wear.
Oh, literally cosplay. And figuratively.
Absolutely. That's a weird one, you know, but hey, to each his own, whatever.
Well, what's ahead for you guys?
Well, we're concentrating on this show. We've got two solid weeks of rehearsal ahead of us, and we open on the 26th, and on the 27th, it's free for veterans, and if there are any veterans out there, or if you're a kiddo and you have a veteran mom or dad, they can email me at dkzfilms@gmail.com to set up their free tickets for Saturday, the 27th. And after this play, God only knows, I've got some projects set up, but truthfully, we'd like to take this play to Vietnam and see how it goes over there.
Annabella?
Yeah, I'm very excited to be working on this play, you know, for the next month and a half. And after that, I've been focusing a lot on writing, so I'm really excited about some of the writing projects I've been working on. Yeah, continuing to do acting.
And do tell.
It's just I'm working on a couple comedy projects right now, early stages, but it's very fun. I love writing comedy. I feel like it's sort of the only thing that I can write. As soon as I start to write something serious, it quickly devolves into lots of jokes. So yeah.
Concluding comments?
Christine, do you have any questions?
We're getting our radio legs here.
You know, favorite ice creams or...
Favorite ice cream.
What do you do for fun?
Ube.
I watch movies about the Vietnam War for fun. Can you believe that?
Wow. You have quite a life.
That's fun.
I guess I would like to say in my closing comments how grateful I am for everybody that's helping us out in this play, the actors to the crew. It's been amazing, and it's been a wild ride, which is the way it is in LA theater, because if some actor gets a big part on a TV series or a movie, then they might just say goodbye, and you have to find somebody else real quick, you know?
Somebody's offering them $10,000. Goodbye.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we've had some cast changes already, but somehow God is watching over us. I mean, I did go to LMU, you know, so maybe that's helped.
It's who you know. By the way, the Odyssey Theater is a beautiful location. The director, Ron Saucy, we featured him. He passed recently, but hopefully they're going strong.
Yeah, Beth Hogan is over there, and she's amazing, and she's been such a huge help. She's helped us with crew and everything like that. I mean, I love her, and they've got a really good operation going on, and I think it's iconic a little bit, the theater over there. So I really wanted the Odyssey Theater, and I got what I wanted. And you know what they say, be careful what you wish for. But, you know, hey, I really hope people get out to the theater. It's a wonderful play, if I may say so myself. We've been working on it for years, and it's finally up.
Well, thank you, everybody, for coming. I hope everybody stays tuned for Pat with Alien Air. And I will be on next Sunday at 7 p.m. with the Mystic Pete Chronicles. I'm also on Saturday night and Tuesday night with a DJ show called In a Dream with Mystic Pete. Well, thank you, everybody, for coming.
Thank you.
David Koner, Zuckerman, Alan McRae, Annabella Ray, and Christine Ann. It was really a very good show. Yay.
Thank you. And
thank you so
and
much.
Hi, Mom.
Hi, Mom. Hi. Hey, Mom. Misty P. Chronicles.